Chapter 5. Search for the guilty, punish the innocent.
Perhaps it was as well that she had been unconscious for 4 weeks. She had missed the aftermath, the SO1 reports, the recriminations, Snood and Tamworth's funerals. She missed everything, except the blame. It was waiting for her when she awoke.
Millen de Flos, Thursday next, a biography. I tried to focus on the strip light above me. I knew that something had happened, but the night when Tamworth and I tackled Acheron Hades had, for the moment at least, been erased from my mind. I frowned, but only fractured images paraded themselves in my consciousness. I remembered shooting a little old lady 3 times and running down a fire escape. I had a dim recollection of blasting away at my own car and being shot in the arm. I looked at my arm, and it was, indeed, tightly bound with a white bandage. Then I remembered being shot again, in the chest. I breathed in and out a couple of times, and was relieved that no crackly rasp reached my ears. There was a nurse in the room who said a few words I couldn't decipher, and smiled. I thought it odd, and then lapsed once again into grateful slumber. The next time I awoke it was evening, and the room seemed colder. I was alone in a single hospital ward with 7 empty beds. Just outside the door I could see an armed police officer on guard duty, while inside a vast quantity of flowers and cards vied for space. As I lay in bed, the memories of the evening returned and tumbled out of my subconscious. I resisted them as long as I could, but it was like holding back a flood. Everything that had happened that night came back in an instant, and as I remembered, I wept. Within a week, I was strong enough to get out of bed. Page and Boswell had both dropped by, and even my mother had made the trip up from Swindon to see me. She told me she had painted the bedroom mauve, much to Dad's disappointment, and it was my fault for suggesting it. I didn't think I'd bother trying to explain. I was glad of any sympathy, of course, but my mind was elsewhere. There had been a monumental fiasco, and someone was going to be responsible. And as the sole survivor of that disastrous evening, I was the strongest and only candidate. A small office was procured in the hospital, and into it came Tamworth's old divisional commander, a man who I had never met, named Flanker, who seemed utterly devoid of humour and warmth. He brought with him a twin cassette tape deck and several SO1 senior operatives who declined to give their names. I gave my testimony slowly and frankly, without emotion, and as accurately as possible. Acheron's strange powers had been hinted at before, but even so, Flanker was having trouble believing it.
"I've read Tamworth's file on Hades, and it makes pretty weird reading, Miss Next," he said. "Tamworth was a bit of a loose cannon. SO5 was his, and his alone. Hades was more of an obsession than a job. From our initial inquiries, it seems that he has been flaunting basic special ops guidelines. Contrary to popular belief, we are accountable to Parliament, albeit on a very discreet basis."
He paused for a moment and consulted his notes. He looked at me and switched on the tape recorder. He identified the tape with the date, his name, and mine, but only referred to the other operatives by numbers. That done, he drew up a chair and sat down.
"So, what happened?"
I paused for a moment and then began, giving the story of my meeting with Tamworth right up until Bucket's hasty departure.
"I'm glad that someone seemed to have some sense," murmured one of the SO1 agents.
I ignored him. "Tamworth and I entered the lobby of Styx's property," I told them. "We took the stairs, and on the 6th floor we heard the shot. We stopped and listened, but there was complete silence. Tamworth thought we had been rumbled.
"You had been rumbled," announced Flanker. "From the transcript of the tape, we know that Snood spoke Hades' name out loud. Hades picked it up and reacted badly. He accused Styx of betraying him, retrieved the package, and then killed his brother. Your surprise attack was no surprise. He knew you were both there."
I took a sip of water. If we had known, would we have retreated? I doubted it.
"Who was in front?"
"Tamworth." We edged slowly around the stairwell and looked onto the seventh-floor landing. It was empty apart from a little old lady who was facing the lift doors and muttering angrily to herself. Tamworth and I edged closer to Styx's open door and peered in. Styx was lying on the floor, and we quickly searched the small apartment.
"We saw you on the surveillance video next," said one of the nameless operatives. "Your search was conducted well."
"Did you see Hades on the video?" The same man coughed. They had been having trouble coming to terms with Tamworth's report, but the video was unequivocal. Hades' likeness had not shown up on it at all, just his voice.
"No," he said finally. "No, we did not."
Tamworth cursed and walked back to the door, I continued. It was then that I heard another shot. I stopped for a moment, remembering the event carefully, yet not fully understanding what I had seen and felt. I remembered that my heart rate had dropped. Everything had suddenly become crystal clear. I had felt no panic, just an overwhelming desire to see the job completed. I had seen Tamworth die, but had felt no emotion. That was to come later.
"Miss Next?"
asked Flanker, interrupting my thoughts. "What? Sorry. Tamworth was hit. I walked over, but a quick glance confirmed that the wound was incompatible with survival. I had to assume Hades was on the landing, so I took a deep breath and glanced out.
"What do you see?"
I saw the little old lady standing by the lift. I had heard no one run off downstairs, so assumed Hades was on the roof. I glanced out again. The old lady gave up waiting and walked past me on her way to the stairs, splashing through a puddle of water on the way. She tut-tutted as she passed Tamworth's body. I switched my attention back to the landing and to the stairwell that led to the roof. As I walked slowly toward the roof access, a doubt crept into my mind. I turned back to look at the little old lady, who had started off down the stairs and was grumbling about the infrequency of trams. Her footprints from the water caught my eye. Despite her small feet, the wet footprints were made by a man's size shoe. I required no more proof. It was rule number 2. Acheron could lie in thought, deed, action, and appearance. For the first time ever, I fired a gun in anger. There was silence, so I continued. I saw at least 3 of the 4 shots hit the lumbering figure on the stairs. The old lady, or at the very least, her image, tumbled out of sight, and I walked cautiously up to the head of the stairwell. Her belongings were strewn all the way down the concrete steps with her shopping trolley on the landing below. Her groceries had spilled out, and several cans of cat food were rolling slowly down the steps.
"So you hit her?"
"Definitely." Flanker dug a small evidence bag out of his pocket and showed it to me. It contained 3 of my slugs, flattened as though they had been fired into the side of a tank. When Flanker spoke again, his voice was edged with disbelief.
"You say that Acheron disguised himself as an old lady?"
"Yes, sir," I replied, looking straight ahead.
"How did he do that?"
"I don't know, sir."
"How could a man over 6'6" dress in a small woman's clothes?"
"I don't think he did it physically.
I think he just projected what he wanted me to see.
That sounds crazy.
There's a lot we don't know about Hades.
That I can agree with. The old lady's name was Mrs. Grimswold. We found her wedged up the chimney in Styx's apartment. It took 3 men to pull her out.
Flanker thought for a moment and let one of the other men ask a question.
I'm interested to know why you were both armed with expanding ammunition,
said one of the other officers, not looking at me but at the wall. He was short and dark and had an annoying twitch in his left eye.
Fluted hollow points and high-power loads. What were you planning to shoot, buffalo?
I took a deep breath. Hades was shot 6 times without any ill effects in 77, sir. Tamworth gave us expanded ammunition to use against him. He said he had SO1 approval.
Well, he didn't. If the papers get hold of this, there will be hell to pay. Spec Ops doesn't have a good relationship with the press, Miss Next. The Mole keeps on wanting access for one of its journalists. In this climate of accountability, the politicians are leaning on us more and more. Expanding ammunition? Shit, not even the Special Cavalry use those on Russians.
That's what I said, I countered. But having seen the state of these, I shook the bag of flattened slugs. I can see that Tamworth showed considerable restraint. We should have been carrying armor-piercing.
Don't even think about it.
We had a break then. Flanker and the others vanished into the next room to argue, while a nurse changed the dressing on my arm. I had been lucky. There had been no infection. I was thinking about Snood when they returned to resume the interview. As I walked carefully down the stairwell, it was apparent that Acheron was now unarmed, I continued. A 9mm Beretta lay on the concrete steps next to a tin of custard powder. Of Acheron and the little old lady, there was no sign. On the landing, I found a door to an apartment that had been pushed open with great force, shearing both hinge pins and the chub door bolt. I quickly questioned the occupants of the apartment, but they were both insensible with laughter. It seemed Acheron had told them some sort of joke about 3 anteaters in a pub, and I got no sense out of either of them. One of the operatives was slowly shaking her head. "What is it now?" I asked indignantly.
"Neither of the 2 people you describe remember you or Hades coming through their apartment. All they recall is the door bursting open for no apparent reason. How do you account for this?"
I thought for a moment. "Obviously, I can't. Perhaps he has control over the weak-minded. We still only have a small idea of this man's powers."
"Hmm,"
replied the operative thoughtfully.
"To tell the truth, the couple did try to tell us the joke about the anteaters. We wondered about that."
"It wasn't funny, was it?"
"Not at all, but they seemed to think it was."
I was beginning to feel angry and didn't like the way the interview was going. I collected my thoughts and continued, arguing to myself that the sooner this was over, the better. I looked slowly around the apartment and found an open window in the bedroom. It led out onto the fire escape, and as I peered out, I could see Acheron's form running down the rusty steps 4 floors below. I knew I couldn't catch him, and it was then that I saw Snood. He stumbled out from behind a parked car and pointed his revolver at Hades as he dropped to the ground. At the time, I didn't understand what he was doing there.
"But you know now."
My heart sank. He was there for me. I felt tears well up and then fought them down. I was damned if I was going to start crying like a baby in front of this bunch. So I expertly turned the sniff into a cough.
"He was there because he knew what he had done," said Flanker. "He knew that by speaking Hades' name out loud, he had compromised you and Tamworth. We believe he was trying to make amends. At 89 years of age,
he was attempting to take on a man of superior strength, resolve, and intellect. He was brave. He was stupid. Did you hear anything they said?
Not at first. I proceeded down the fire escape and heard Snood yell out, "Armed police!" and "On the ground!" By the time I reached the second floor, Hades had convinced Snood to give up his weapon and had shot him. I fired twice from where I was. Hades stumbled slightly, but he soon recovered and sprinted for the nearest car. My car.
What happened then?
I clambered down the ladder and dropped to the ground, landing badly on some trash and twisting my ankle. I looked up and saw Acheron punch in the window of my car and open the door. It didn't take him much more than a couple of seconds to tear off the steering lock and start the engine. The street was, I knew, a cul-de-sac. If Acheron wanted to escape, it would have to be through me. I hobbled out into the middle of the road and waited. I started firing as soon as he pulled away from the curb. All my shots hit their mark, two in the windscreen and one in the radiator grill. The car kept accelerating and I kept firing. A wing mirror and the other headlamp shattered. The car would hit me if it carried on as it was, but I didn't really care anymore. The operation was a mess. Acheron had killed Tamworth and Snood. He'd kill countless others if I didn't give it my all. With my last shot, I hit his offside front tire, and Acheron finally lost control. The car hit a parked Studebaker and turned over, bounced along on its roof, and finally teetered to a stop barely 3 feet from where I stood. It rocked unsteadily for a moment and then was still, the water from the radiator mixing with the petrol that leaked onto the road. I took another sip of water and looked at the assembled faces. They were following my every word, but the hardest part of it was yet to come. I reloaded, then pulled open the driver's door of the upturned car. I'd expected Acheron to tumble out in a heap, but Hades, not for the first time that night, had failed to live up to expectations. The car was empty.
"Did you see him escape?"
"No. I was just pondering this when I heard a familiar voice behind me. It was Bucket. He had returned."
"Where is he?"
Bucket yelled.
"I don't know,"
I stammered in reply, checking the back of the car.
"He was here."
"Stay here," shouted Bucket. "I'm going to check around the front."
I was glad to be given orders and spared the burden of initiative. But as Bucket turned to leave, he shimmered slightly, and I knew something was wrong. Without hesitating, I shot Bucket in the back 3 times. He collapsed in a heap.
"You shot another operative?"
said one of the SO1 crowd with an incredulous tone.
"In the back?"
I ignored her. Only it wasn't Bucket, of course. The figure that picked itself up from the road to face me was Acheron. He rubbed his back, where I'd hit him, and smiled benignly.
"That wasn't very sporting," he said with a smile.
"I'm not here for the sport," I assured him. One of the SO1 officers interrupted me.
"You seem to shoot a lot of people in the back next. Point-blank range with fluted slugs, and he survived. I'm sorry. This is quite impossible."
"It happened."
"She's lying," he said indignantly. "I've had just about enough of this."
But Flanker laid a hand on his arm to quieten him.
"Carry on, Miss Next."
I did.
"Hello, Thursday,"
Hades said. "Acheron," I replied. He smiled.
"Tamworth's blood is getting cold on the concrete upstairs, and it's all your fault. Just give me your gun, and we can finish this all up and go home."
Hades reached out his hand, and I felt a strong impulse to give him my weapon. But I had turned him down before when he was using more persuasive methods, when I was a student and he was a lecturer.
Perhaps Tamworth knew I was strong enough to resist him. Perhaps this was another reason he wanted me on his team. I don't know. Hades realized this and said instead, in a genial manner,
"It's been a long time. 15 years, isn't it?"
"Summer of 69, I replied grimly. I had little time for his games.
69?
He asked, having thought about it for a moment.
16 years, then. I seem to remember we were quite chummy.
You were a brilliant teacher, Acheron. I've not met an intellect to compare with yours. Why all this?
I could say the same about you, returned Acheron with a smile. You were the only student of mine whom I could ever describe as brilliant. Yet here you are, working as a glorified plod, a literatech, a lackey for the network. What brought you to SO5?
Fate. There was a pause. Acheron smiled.
I always liked you, Thursday. You turned me down, and, as we all know, there is nothing more seductive than resistance. I often wondered what I'd do if we met again. My star pupil, my protégé. We were nearly lovers.
I was never your protégé, Hades. He smiled again.
Have you ever wanted a new car?
He asked me quite suddenly. I did, of course, and said so.
How about a large house? How about 2 large houses? In the country, with grounds, and a Rembrandt.
I saw what he was up to. If you want to buy my compliance, Acheron, you have to choose the right currency. Acheron's face fell.
You are strong, Thursday. Avarice works on most people.
I was angry now. What do you want with the Chuzzlewit manuscript, Acheron? To sell it?
Stealing and selling? How common, he sneered. I'm sorry about your 2 friends. Hollow points make quite a mess, don't they?
We stood there facing one another. It wouldn't be long before SO14 were on the scene. On the ground, I ordered him, or I swear I'll fire. Hades was suddenly a blur of movement. There was a sharp crack, and I felt something pluck at my upper arm. There was a sensation of warmth, and I realized with a certain detached interest that I had been shot.
Good try, Thursday. How about with the other arm?
Without knowing it, I had loosed off a shot in his direction. It was this that he was congratulating me on. I knew that I had 30 seconds at best before the loss of blood started to make me woozy. I transferred the automatic to my left hand and started to raise it again. Acheron smiled admiringly. He would have continued his brutal game for as long as he could, but the distant wail of police sirens hastened him into action. He shot me once in the chest and left me for dead. The SO1 officials shuffled slightly as I concluded my story. They swapped looks, but I had no interest in whether they believed me or not. Hades had left me for dead, but my time wasn't yet up. The copy of Jane Eyre that Tamworth had given me had saved my life. I'd placed it in my breast pocket. Hades' slug had penetrated to the back cover, but had not gone through. Broken ribs, a collapsed lung, and a bruise to die for, but I had survived. It was luck, or fate, or whatever the hell you want to make of it.
That's it? Asked Flanker.
I nodded. That's it. It wasn't it, of course. There was a lot more, but none of it was relevant to them. I hadn't told them how Hades had used Filbert Snood's death to grind me down emotionally. That was how he managed to get the first shot in.
That's about all we need to know, Miss Next. You can return to SO27 as soon as you are able. I would remind you that you are bound by the confidentiality clause you signed.
A misplaced word could have very poor consequences. Is there anything you would like to add yourself?
I took a deep breath. I know a lot of this sounds far-fetched, but it is the truth. I am the first witness who has seen what Hades will do to survive. Whoever pursues him in the future must be fully aware of what he is capable of.
Flanker leaned back in his chair. He looked at the man with the twitch, who nodded in return.
Academic, Miss Next.
What do you mean?
Hades is dead. SO14 are not complete losers, despite a certain trigger happiness. They pursued him up the M4 that night, until he crashed his car by Junction 12. It rolled down an embankment and burst into flames. We didn't want to tell you until we'd heard your evidence.
The news hit me squarely and hard. Revenge had been a prime emotion keeping me together over the past 2 weeks. Without a burning desire to see Hades punished, I might not even have made it at all. Without Acheron, all my testimony would be left unproven. I hadn't expected it all to be believed, but at least I could look forward to being vindicated when others came across him.
Sorry? I asked suddenly.
I said that Hades was dead.
No, he isn't, I said without thinking. Flanker supposed that my reaction was the effect of traumatic shock.
It might be difficult to come to terms with, but he is. Burned almost beyond recognition. We had to identify him by dental records. He still had Snood's pistol with him.
The Chuzzlewit manuscript?
No sign. We think destroyed as well.
I looked down. The whole operation had been a fiasco.
Miss Next,
said Flanker, standing up and laying a hand on my shoulder.
You will be pleased to hear that none of this will be published below SO8. You can return to your unit without a blemish on your record. There were errors, but none of us have any idea how anything might have turned out, given a different set of circumstances. As for us, you won't be seeing us again.
He turned off the cassette recorder, wished me good health, and walked out of the room. The other officers joined him, except for the man with the twitch. He waited until his colleagues were out of earshot, then whispered to me,
"I think your testimony is bullshit, Miss Next. The service can ill afford to lose the likes of Philip Tamworth."
"Thank you."
"What for?"
"For telling me his first name." The man moved to say something, thought the better of it, and then left. I got up from the table in the impromptu interview room and stared out of the window. It was warm and sunny outside, and the trees swayed gently in the breeze. The world looked as though it had little room for people like Hades. I allowed the thoughts of the night to come back again. The part I hadn't told them was about Snood. Acheron had talked some more that night. He had indicated the tired and worn body of Snood and said,
"Filbert asked me to say he was sorry."
"That's Filbert's father," I corrected him.
"No,"
he chuckled.
"That was Filbert."
I looked at Snood again. He was lying on his back with his eyes open, and the likeness was unmistakable, despite the 60-year age gap. "Oh my God, no! Filbert? Was that him?" Acheron seemed to be enjoying himself.
"Unavoidably detained is a chronoguard euphemism for a time aggregation Thursday. I'm surprised you didn't know that. Caught outside the here now. 60 years piled onto him in less than a minute. It's little surprise he didn't want you to see him."
There hadn't been any girl in Tewkesbury after all. I had heard about time dilations and temporal instabilities from my father. In the world of the event, the cone and the horizon, Filbert Snood had been unavoidably detained.
The tragedy of it was, he never felt he could tell me. It was then, as I hit my lowest, that Acheron had turned and fired. It was as he had planned it. I walked slowly back to my room and sat on the bed feeling utterly dejected. Tears come easily to me when no one is about. I wept copiously for about 5 minutes and felt a great deal better, blew my nose noisily, then switched on the television as a distraction. I rattled through the channels until I chanced across the Toad News Network. It was more about the Crimea, of course.
"Still on the subject of the Crimea," announced the anchorwoman. "The Goliath Corporation's Special Weapons Division has unveiled the latest weapon in the struggle against the Russian aggressors. It is hoped that the new ballistic plasma energy rifle, codenamed Stonk, will be the decisive weapon to change the tide of the war. Our defense correspondent, James Backbiter, takes us through it."
The scene changed to a close-up of an exotic-looking weapon handled by a soldier in military special ops uniform.
"This is the new Stonk plasma rifle, unveiled today by the Goliath Special Weapons Division," announced Backbiter, standing next to the soldier in what was obviously a test range. "We can't tell you very much about it for obvious reasons, but we can show its effectiveness and report that it uses a bolt of concentrated energy to destroy armor and personnel up to a mile away."
I watched in horror as the soldier demonstrated the new weapon. Invisible bolts of energy tore into the target tank with the power of 10 of our howitzers. It was like an artillery piece in the palm of your hand. The barrage ended, and Backbiter asked a colonel a couple of obviously posed questions as soldiers paraded with the new weapon in the background.
"When do you suppose the frontline troops will be issued with Stonk?" "The first weapons are being shipped now. The rest will be supplied just as soon as we can set up the necessary factories."
"And finally, its effect on the conflict?"
A small amount of emotion flickered on the colonel's face.
"I predict Stonk will have the Russians suing for peace within a month."
"Oh, shit," I murmured out loud. I'd heard this particular phrase many times during my time in the military. It had supplanted the hoary old "over by Christmas" for sheer fatuousness. It had always, without exception, been followed by an appalling loss of life. Even before the first deployment of the new weapon, its mere existence had upset the balance of power in the Crimea. No longer keen on a withdrawal, the English government was trying to negotiate a surrender of all Russian troops. The Russians were having none of it. The UN had demanded that both sides return to the talks at Budapest, but it had all stalled. The Imperial Russian army had dug themselves in against the expected onslaught. Earlier in the day, the Goliath special weapons spokesman had been instructed to appear before Parliament to explain the delay of the new weapons, as they were now a month behind schedule. A screech of tyres roused me from my thoughts. I looked up. In the middle of the hospital room was a brightly painted sports car. I blinked twice, but it didn't vanish. There was no earthly reason why it should be in the room, or even any evidence as to how it got there, the door being only wide enough for a bed. But there it was. I could smell the exhaust and hear the engine ticking over, but for some reason I did not find it at all unusual. The occupants were staring at me. The driver was a woman in her mid-30s who looked sort of familiar.
"Thursday!"
cried the driver with a sense of urgency in her voice. I frowned. It all looked real, and I was definitely sure I had seen the driver somewhere before. The passenger, a young man in a suit whom I didn't know, waved cheerily.
"He didn't die,"
said the woman, as though she wouldn't have long to speak.
"The car crash was a blind. Men like Acheron don't die that easily. Take the Literatech job in Swindon."
"Swindon?" I echoed. I thought I had escaped that town. It afforded me a few too many painful memories. I opened my mouth to speak, but there was another screech of rubber, and the car departed, folding up rather than fading out until there was nothing left but the echo of the tyres and the faint smell of exhaust. Pretty soon that had gone too, leaving no clue as to its strange appearance. I held my head in my hands. The driver had been very familiar. It had been me. My arm was almost healed by the time the internal inquiry circulated its findings. I wasn't permitted to read it, but I wasn't bothered. If I had known what was in it, I would probably only have been more dissatisfied and annoyed than I was already. Boswell had visited me again to tell me I had been awarded 6 months' sick leave before returning, but it didn't help. I didn't want to return to the Literatech's office, at least not in London. "What are you going to do?" asked Paige. She had turned up to help me pack before I was discharged from the hospital. 6 months' leave could be a long time if you've got no hobbies or family, or boyfriend," she went on. She could be very direct at times. "I have lots of hobbies." "Name one."
"Painting."
"Really?" "Yes, really. I'm currently painting a seascape." "How long has it taken you so far?"
"About 7 years. It must be very good." "It's a piece of crap."
"Seriously, though," said Turner, who had become closer to me in these past few weeks than during the entire time we had known each other, "what are you going to do?" I handed her the Speshops 27 Gazette. It outlined postings around the country. Paige looked at the entry that I had circled in red ink.
"Swindon?"
"Why not? It's home."
"Home it might be," replied Turner. "But weird it definitely is."
She tapped the job description.
"It's only for an operative. You've been acting inspector for over 3 years.
3 and a half. It doesn't matter. I'm going." I didn't tell Paige the real reason. It could have been a coincidence, of course, but the advice from the driver of the car had been most specific. Take the Literatech job in Swindon. Perhaps the vision had been real after all. The Gazette with the job offer had arrived after the visitation by the car. If it had been right about the job in Swindon, it stood to reason that perhaps the news about Hades was also correct. Without any further thought, I had applied. I couldn't tell Paige about the car. If she had known, friendship notwithstanding, she would have reported me to Boswell. Boswell would have spoken to Flanker, and all sorts of unpleasantness might have happened. I was getting quite good at concealing the truth, and I felt happier now than I had for months.
"We'll miss you in the department Thursday."
"It'll pass."
"I'll miss you."
"Thanks, Paige. I appreciate it. I'll miss you too." We hugged. She told me to keep in touch and left the room, pager bleeping. I finished packing and thanked the nursing staff, who gave me a brown paper parcel as I was about to leave.
"What's this?" I asked.
"It belonged to whoever saved your life that night."
"What do you mean?"
"A passerby attended to you before the medics arrived. The wound in your arm was plugged, and they wrapped you in their coat to keep you warm. Without their intervention, you might well have bled to death."
Intrigued, I opened the package. Firstly, there was a handkerchief that, despite several washings, still bore the stains of my own blood. There was an embroidered monogram in the corner that read EFR. Secondly, the parcel contained a jacket, a sort of casual evening coat that might have been very popular in the middle of the last century. I searched the pockets and found a bill from a milliner. It was made out to one Edward Fairfax Rochester, Esquire, and was dated 1833. I sat down heavily on the bed and stared at the two articles of clothing and the bill. Ordinarily, I would not have believed that Rochester could have torn himself from the pages of Jane Eyre and come to my aid that night. Such a thing is, of course, quite impossible. I might have dismissed the whole thing as a ludicrously complicated prank had it not been for one thing. Edward Rochester and I had met once before.